So Hebrews chapter 12, beginning in verse 1, the author notes, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted." Lord, would you bless the reading of your word? Would you guide our hearts as we meditate on your word? In Jesus' name I pray it. Amen. The city auditorium. That's what it was called, even though I never really lived in a city. I lived in a small town. It was the gym. It was not the school gym, but it was the gym that when I was growing up we used when the school gym was occupied. So it was the place that many of my then junior high, not middle school, games were held. And I remember distinctly one particular, they were like those old wooden theater seats. One particular seat. Because it was that one up and above. There was no seating down below, up above in the balcony. It was that one I could look up there every single time and I could see my mother because she never missed a game. And so if I wanted to know if it was time to start the game, I would simply look up at up at that section in that seat, and there she would sit. And I don't think she missed a single solitary game all of the years that I played any sport. I knew that I could count on her as one of the crowd. The author this morning, it makes me think of that sort of scenario, because the author of Hebrews this morning turns the corner, so to speak. Therefore is, of course, a key word. You've all heard sermons about therefore, but he uses this imagery of a cloud of witnesses in a sporting event, in particular, a race. Let us run. And so automatically that sort of image is set in our mind. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, and then he tells us three things to consider or to follow, if you will. But I don't want us to miss that preface. Therefore, since, because of the things that have just been said, we need to follow these subsequent things. But let's make an observation. We are surrounded. Now there's another image here. Think for a moment about the image of a cloud. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, I want us to look at two things in that phrase. First of all, this surrounding. Can you imagine with me for a moment being in the midst of a cloud? It encompasses you. It's everywhere about you. And that actually fits with the second observation that I want us to see, and that is this word surrounded. This word surrounded is a word that means something like encompass. It is a word that is also hints at or gives the idea or the feel of embracing. It is this idea of being fully encompassed by, fully surrounded, even to go so far as the embrace of a hug. Now that is not exactly the way he uses this word. It's not a hug, so don't misunderstand me. I'm not going too far. But the sense of the word is this sense of being utterly and completely, in a good way here, surrounded, encompassed by such a great cloud of witnesses. You cannot turn in any sort of direction and not know that there is a great cloud of witnesses that surrounds you. And that is our first observation, is we are surrounded. Actually, there are two images here just in this first phrase. Not only are we surrounded, but we are surrounded in a way that we are supported. So amidst all of the persecution and whatever it is in particular that the author or that the audience of the Hebrews is going through, one of the things that the author says to them as he finishes this great list of those who have gone before in faith, one of the things he says to them is that you are still surrounded, you are supported. It is this group of witnesses that surround you. You, in other words, to put it like I think we mentioned last week, you are not alone. And with that comes great comfort. But there's more that he says here. Not only is that meant to be a comfort, and I don't want to miss that. I want us to pause and say, hold on and be comforted. Be comforted that we are not alone. Be comforted that we are surrounded. There should be a way in which the fellowship of the faith is so incredibly encouraging and comforting. And oftentimes it gets twisted in this way of it's too convicting. I've turned away or I've fallen away or I've done this or that or the other and it's too convicting. And the author of Hebrews turns that sideways and says it should never be so. If you're turning away or you're tempted to turn away, turn to this cloud of witnesses and remember that you are surrounded and you are supported so that you don't turn away. So, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, what is the witnessing we're talking about? The witnesses here are those, of course, in chapter 11. He's connecting these texts. So the list of those in chapter 11. And remember, not just those who were described, but this is a representative list. Because remember what he said last time in our text last week. What more shall we say? Can we keep on going? No, we can't. So there's more in this crowd than even are listed here. And these are the witnesses, and they are surrounding us and supporting us as witnesses, that is, examples of the faith. They're witnesses of the way they have lived when they were faithful. And they are witnesses of the reminder of God's faithfulness. Maybe you've heard that word witness. Originally, it is the word marturios, from which we get our word martyr. Now, that comes actually sometime later in history when their very witnessing, their very standing for the faith, their very being firm and not backing down ended in martyrdom, them giving them their lives for their faith. That did come historically later. But you can't help but make the connection. The witnesses are steadfast, firm, always there kind of witnesses. Reminding us of the faith. Reminding us of the foundation of God's faithfulness. And reminding us of the looking forward to the completion of that. We are surrounded by these kinds of witnesses. There is also, in the imagery that the author of Hebrews chooses, this hint of the idea of these witnesses filling the seats of the stands, so to speak. So we are not only surrounded by the witness of their faithfulness and of the stories that he had just told that are true, that points to God's goodness and God's steadfastness and God's faithfulness. There is a sense, a hint, of that they are almost as if spectators in this race that we run. So we are supported as well. We are surrounded and we are supported. This should bring us comfort. And as is explicitly noted here, should bring us courage to do something. Courage to obey. Courage to endure, courage to persevere. So this call, this image, this reminder that we are not alone is for our comfort. And it, and honestly, I cannot get around the image of just being so encompassed. That word also is used for clothing, as you would put a piece of clothing, a tunic, if you will, over your neck and over your shoulders. You're encompassed by it. You're surrounded so closely. You can't get around that image and the beauty of that image and be comforted by that image. But it's also a call for us to follow in the footsteps of those who are martyrs and to have the courage then to do as the author of Hebrews tells us. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight. And so he tells us three things that we are now encouraged and supported to do in relation to this cloud of witnesses and the faith and the faithfulness of God. The first thing is there in verse 1, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. The second part is in the end of verse 1, and let us run with endurance, looking to Jesus. And then the third part is in verse 3, and let us then consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself. The cloud of witnesses gives us courage to lay aside every weight and sin, gives us courage to run with endurance, and gives us courage to consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself. I actually have thought this through, and until this moment, I didn't realize that we were going to start with the last one. And there's a reason I want to start with the last one. So look at verse 3. Consider him, that is Jesus, who he just explained and introduced in the previous verses. We will get to that, so that's not unimportant. But there's a reason I want to look at this, because that word consider is a unique word. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. Consider. Used to do youth ministry, and in youth ministry I used to plan missions trips. In particular, we had a group and we would go from here in Colorado all the way up to Vancouver, British Columbia. Well, if you know your geography, you know that if you drive, that includes driving through places like Wyoming and Utah. So, what I quickly learned from that endeavor was that I needed to do some extensive planning, thinking through, reckoning with what could and could not happen, because if something happens and you need a bathroom break or you need sustenance or you need drinks in the middle of Wyoming, there are not a lot of options. Same with parts of Utah. And so I would plan this trip going through how many miles to this point and this point and this point. And then I would say, wait a minute, okay, so if something happens and we can't make that far in this point, what's the next shortest version? And if we have a good day, which I pray we do, and we have a good day of traveling, what's the next step? And so I would have point A, and here's our intended realistic destination for stopping for bathroom breaks. If we have somebody who was, I don't know, a teenager and drank a 32-ounce drink before they got on the van, and we have to stop earlier, here's the place we're probably going to have to stop. Not that that would ever happen, but hypothetically. If, on the other hand, we're rolling and they're all falling asleep and nobody's got to go to the bathroom and we make really good time, here's the place we're going to stop if we make good time. And so I had this whole itinerary thought out as I considered each possibility and each moment. Not that I could control it, but that I could plan it and plan ahead. Now, why do I tell you that story? I tell you that story because that is something of what is carried in this word, consider. It is to think deeply and, what's the word I'm looking for? Think deeply about in a way that implies action, in a way that leads you to doing something. This particular word considered. Let me actually just read what one theologian wrote. This verb, translated consider, is rare, and it only occurs here in the New Testament. He says it means to reckon up, and it's used of complex mental activity, such as Moses' preparation of the laws for the people. Consider. Another way to put it in a more quote-unquote spiritual way would be to meditate deeply upon. The author tells us that we are called by God's grace in this cloud of witnesses, in this pursuit of faith, to consider, to look to think deeply and meditate in a way that would draw us nearer to Him, that in a way that would guide us to create intentional habits in knowing Him more richly and more deeply. It consider Him. That's the idea. That's the sense. It's an intentional, worshipful, magnificent thing that He is worth considering. So think deeply on Him in a way that transforms your life in more, again, more church terms, we would say meditate in a way that leads to transformation. But I want to put in there this other piece of an intentionality. It's not merely a sense of positive thinking. If I just think about Jesus, that's true. Just think about Jesus, you will become more like Him. But it's more intentional. It's if I think more about Jesus, if I meditate more about Jesus, my heart will be shaped. And what habits then will I change in my life to shape me more like Him, to become more like Him? It is this thing that reinforces this habit, this intention that reinforces itself. As I consider and think on Jesus, I see His beauty and I want to think more on Him and more on Him and more on Him and more on Him. And it tracks in our real world and it tracks with the audience of the Hebrews. Consider, because watch what he says. Consider Him, think on Him, meditate deeply on Him who endured from sinners such hostility against Himself. Remember, he is writing to an audience who is experiencing some sort of tension, some sort of conflict that is leading them to this place of should I stay or should I go? And so the author of Hebrews says, instead of thinking those sorts of things, should I stay or should I go, turn over in your mind over and over again the one you are drawn to in the first place, the one who endured all of these pressures and persecutions and endured hostility, the kind of hostility perhaps that you are dealing with. Consider Him and think on Him again and again and again. Why? So that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. Thinking about faint-hearted, have you ever been tired?
No.
Fatigued? Have you ever thought about the kinds of fatigue? He tells us this is a special kind of fatigue. He uses these two words. They actually sort of overlap. So you will not grow weary and faint-hearted. It's this overlapping of weary being tired and fatigued and just sort of an exhausted kind of a thing, overlapping with this idea of faint-hearted, which also has the sense of being tired, but it's tired to the point of discouragement and wanting to quit. You can be exhausted, and you can be exhausted after you have done this great, incredible service thing in the name of the gospel and say, oh, that's a good tired. You ever had those good tireds? That's not the kind of tired he's talking about. He's talking about the tired that comes when you want to quit. You get to the point of discouraged. He says, consider Jesus who endured, and you won't become that kind of tired. Turn your heart and mind and meditations and thoughts and then habits toward Jesus who suffered in this way so that you don't become that kind of tired and exhausted and fatigued so that you want to quit. Turn your attention to Him. Because beyond Him. Let me put this a different way so it's not unclear. Because beyond that moment of fatigue, we know through faith is the promise of utter and perfect fellowship with Him. So consider him. Think deeply, meditate deeply on Jesus. Let me pause here for a moment and just say, we've all been in church, so this is not new. But I wonder sometimes if we don't let this sink in, if we miss it. That is to say, if in fact this idea of considering carries with it meditation for transformation, and if I truly want to consider Jesus, then my part in having the courage to take a step of faith toward him, my part is to intentionally pursue him. That is to say, what are the ways in my life that I'm building habits to follow him increasingly more and more and more? What are ways that I am intentionally shaping my mind to think on him and consider him when in the past I haven't done that or my habit has been other things? What are those kinds of things? This is why traditionally Christians turn to those things that are called spiritual disciplines. Because we long to meditate for transformation. We long to see Jesus through all of these things. We do that in other parts of life. Do we do that here? Consider Jesus who suffered. Think about him. So why did we start with that when that's verse 3 for Hebrews? Well, we started with that because I think that it's important to realize who we're looking to. It's important to look at, to realize in the words of the author of Hebrews that Jesus is better. That is the foundational motivation for us to be able to then say, let us lay aside. In other words, this is the why before the what. The why is because Jesus is worth it. The why is because Jesus is better. The why is because when we think about, meditate deeply on who Jesus is and what he has done and what he has shown us and his completed work on the cross, when we dwell upon that deeply, then we get to the what and the laying aside of the sin and the weight that and the things that so easily entangle. The what seems a little more able to grasp and to understand. Well, of course we'll do that. So consider Jesus. So what? What do we do as we consider Jesus? Well, because Jesus is better, because Jesus is worth it, because Jesus endured from sinners such hostility in this act of redemption to bring us back and call us sons and daughters of the Most High, because of this, then let us lay aside every weight and the sin which clings so closely. We are so close to January 1st. And something happens January 1st. I have a membership at a gym. I've had this membership at a gym for years. What I don't need on January 1st is I don't need the people who come for January 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and then never come back because they clog the gym that I like to use. We know this. Now, that's me overstating the case a bit and being a bit of a jerk to make a point. But something happens on January 1st. There are people who have the best of intentions to say, I want to lay aside the weight. And then about January 31st, the only weight they laid aside was how much money it cost for that gym membership for that month or year. Why is that? Because they never ever had the end in mind. They wanted to lay aside the weight for some ultimately worthless pursuit. If I just look better. So why do we consider him? Because this is the worthwhile pursuit, to lay aside the weight. Jesus is the worthwhile pursuit. So as we continually look to him, as we continually consider him, here's what we do. We start to realize that every weight is less worthy than Jesus, and so we can let it aside. The sin which clings so closely. There's a couple categories here, and you have to ask the question, what does the author exactly mean when he chooses these things? Because note what he says, let us lay aside. First of all, that lay aside is to stop. It's to put away. It's to quit doing those things. That's the sense of laying aside. Laying aside feels almost a little too tame. So let's be clear. The author is saying, let's stop doing those things. Let's put them away. I love this phrase, and I don't know where it came from, but ruthlessly eliminate them. Ruthlessly eliminate them. Let's lay them aside. The first thing he says is the weight. What is the weight? The weight is literally an obstacle. The New American Standard says obstacle. NIV calls it a hindrance. Those are correct things. It's those things that get in the way. Now, it's possible what the author here is talking about. He's talking about things that aren't necessarily evil in and of themselves. But they are encumbrances. They are things that get in the way of us fully following Jesus. In ancient times, as he uses this image of the race, they would run with no clothes. They would remove every single encumbrance, every obstacle, whatever it is to make me lighter. Everyone. Let us also lay aside every weight. It fascinates me, this kind of perspective. And it's important, again, I'm going to repeat this over and over. It's important to remember the why and to see the magnificence of what the author of Hebrews is saying. We do this because of the beauty of Jesus. We do this because of the power of fellowship with Him. It's not that those things are necessarily bad, but they are bad when they get in the way of the best. The good things are not good if they get in the way of the best thing. And we can easily, the reason it fascinates me is because we can easily frame this conversation and saying, well, I like this and it's not such a bad thing, is it? No. But you're missing the whole entire point if we go too far down that road. The whole entire point is if it gets in the way of the best thing, then yes, it's a bad thing. Am I saying those things are bad? Whatever those things are, fill in the blank for you. No. But do they distract from the best thing? It's like running a race, since the author of Hebrews uses that. If you have a race, I used to run cross country, and cross country had a course. And before it was time to run the race, my coach would always have us run the course. Jog through the course, called it warm up. I didn't realize that there was such wisdom in that because you have to run the course to finish the race. I know, that's really deep, right? But here's the point. The point is, if we think there are a few good things, that is similar to running the race and then taking a few steps off. Well, that's a good thing. It's just a little ways. It's just a little bit. It's no really big deal. But what happens if I take a few steps off and I continue going? The path goes here and I go here. Well, it wasn't a bad thing. I was just a little ways off. So the author of Hebrews says, lay aside anything that might distract you, anything that might be a hindrance, anything that might be an obstacle. Perhaps he is even, he is certainly even talking about those things that might not be evil in and of themselves. But then he goes on and he develops his thought further. And he notes explicitly, and let us also lay aside, set aside, stop, cease, ruthlessly eliminate the sin which clings so closely. So yes, that also means the sin. Let's ruthlessly eliminate. And I like that phrase because I think it leads us to this idea that ruthlessly eliminate means because Jesus is worth it. We don't want to even put ourselves in the place where those things might be an option. We like to sometimes, not say it out loud, we don't do that, but we like to sometimes think that since by God's grace we are free, and we are, that means we can get to this line and we can say, well, this is not sin, but I can get as close as possible because I'm free. And the author of Hebrews, I think here in this text, in one sense, is saying, why would you even do that? Set aside everything because you want to run the race and pursue this one, this one that is better. Turn away from those things. Especially those things, this idea, this, here's the way I put it in my notes, this clings so closely. Not only do we free ourselves from obstacles, but we flee the sticky sins. Those sticky sins, whatever they are, it's the ones that just seem to cling so closely. So let's ruthlessly eliminate them because Jesus is better. I love this story of Monday Night Football years ago. Chicago Bears versus the New York Giants. And one of the announcers, as they were watching the game, made this one of those side observations that are very interesting that really don't say much. Made this observation about Walter Payton. At that point, the Bears running back had accumulated over 9 miles in career rushing yardage. Put together 9 miles. That's a lot. The best running back of all time, in my opinion. And as soon as the announcer made that observation, the other responded, and yeah, that's with somebody knocking him down every 4.6 yards. That's actually the picture here. Let us run with endurance. In other words, get back up and keep running. But there's one more thing. You see, the thing with Walter Payton that was amazing, sweetness, was that he could juke and he could jive. He could run hard and he could take a hit. But there are highlights of him running and juking and jiving. He never took a hit he didn't have to take. In other words, he would lay aside any of the obstacles he could lay aside. He would sidestep any of the obstacles he would sidestep. He'd go through what he had to run well and run with endurance. In a similar sense, the author of Hebrews is saying, sidestep, get rid of any of the obstacles you can get rid of. Remove them, ruthlessly eliminate them. Don't put yourself in that place so that you can run with endurance. That's the last part of verse 1. And so then, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Run with endurance. That is, run to finish. The image is not uncommon in scriptures. You can probably think of Paul writing to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. As he notes why, listen to this, he also, similar to the author of Hebrews, notes the why first. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 23, I do it all for the sake of the gospel. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Run to the gospel. Run for the gospel. Run considering Jesus, to use the language in Hebrews. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable one. So I do not run aimlessly. I run for the gospel, Paul would say. Run the race. Interesting, that's the way the author of Hebrews put it. Let us run with endurance, run to finish. Run what? The race that is set before us, the race of the gospel, the race of considering Jesus as better and pursuing Jesus and knowing full well that you get all of Jesus on that one day. So have the courage, because you are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, have the courage to run with endurance. Verse 2, run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Now here is where he makes it explicit. So in one sense, what the author of Hebrews does is twice he tells us that in this race, in this journey of faith, our perspective always must be Jesus. Looking to Jesus, verse 2, considering Jesus. In other words, not only looking to him, but thinking deeply and meditating deeply on Jesus. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. That idea of some versions read, looking to Jesus, fixing your eyes on Jesus. I think we all know what that looks like, and that is, when you fix your eyes on Jesus, you're not looking at other things. It's simple. When you fix your eyes on one thing, you're ignoring other things. So look to Jesus. Turn your eyes to him. See how beautiful he is. So he describes him as the founder and the perfecter. Or some versions read the pioneer and the perfecter. New American Standard reads the originator and the perfecter of our faith. That is, Jesus is the preeminent example of faith. And he is, you might say, the end of our faith, the object of our faith. So he is the one who has gone before, so the originator or founder, in that he is the preeminent example and picture of faith, and he is the perfecter of faith in that he is the one who has completed. In his death, burial, and resurrection, he has completed Christ, his God's redemptive work. So he is the perfecter of our faith. Look to Jesus, who is enough. We don't need to continue to look for anything Jesus and. Look to Jesus, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Joy set before him. There is a joyful endurance. I think we need to just acknowledge here that sometimes we have these mismatched categories, if you will. And somehow in this misconception, we think that suffering and joy are contradictory, or in suffering there can't be joy. And that is not, those aren't the biblical categories. In fact, they can't be the biblical categories, because what they tell, and what Paul tells us in Philippians, what the author of Hebrews tells us, is this is the kind of joy that exists underneath and transcends the suffering so that you can get through the suffering. It's the joy that looks beyond the suffering. And so he hints at it here in this last phrase, who for the joy set before him despised the shame and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. The joy is in what is coming. It's the conviction of those things that are sure, but not yet seen. And so Jesus is enduring, looking for that certain and sure joy of being seated with his Father, the joy of unfettered, complete, and beautiful fellowship, joyful endurance. Which I think is part of the reason why we can be so encouraged by the cloud of witnesses, both around us in the church now and the church throughout history. Joyful endurance. Since we are surrounded, we should find comfort. But since we are surrounded by the faith, pointing to the faithful God, we should also find courage. Courage to never give up. Courage to dwell upon, turn our eyes upon Jesus and see how beautiful he is, and see that losing everything else is not a loss at all. There was a story of a third century man who was just shy of death when he wrote these words to his friend. He said, "It's a bad world. An incredibly bad world. But I have discovered in the midst of it a quiet and holy people who have learned a great secret. They have found a joy which is," I love this, "they have found a joy which is 1,000 times better than any pleasure in our sinful life. They are despised and persecuted, but they care not. They are masters of their souls. They have overcome the world. These people are the Christians, and I am one of them. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us set aside every obstacle, every good thing that's not the best thing, every sin that tempts us, that weights us down, that changes our perspective, that says there are pleasures that are better than, and let us pursue and look to Christ, who is the author of the joy that is Again, better than 1,000 times of any other pleasure in this world. Let us turn him over in our minds and our hearts and be transformed to love him more and look like him. In Jesus' name, Lord, let us follow you. Let us think upon your beauty. Let us turn our eyes upon you. Let us be comforted by a cloud of witnesses who are literally around us right now and throughout all of history are a cloud of witnesses. Let us have courage then to stand firm and persevere. Let us, Lord, look to you and find joy more substantial and transcendent than whatever suffering we may go through. Father, forgive us when we turn our minds away from these truths. Turn us back to the magnificence of Jesus, especially this Christmas. In his name we pray. Amen.